Oops, part two. Go.
Back to the metamorphosis.
All right, yeah. So, I mean, I felt like I took such a big step forward in, you know, in my sophomore year, you know. Like, I started off really strong. You know, I was doing really well in all my classes. I felt like I finally kind of had a direction, and, you know, I kind of had, like, my first real relationship that I was in. It was kind of long distance, but, you know, it was just kind of cool, you know, and I was handling everything. I was in my own place for the first time, and just, like, yeah, it was just an insanely cool, you know, time. And, you know, as it continued to go on, I just kind of was running out of steam, really, I guess, just trying to handle everything. And so it ended kind of rough. I just still did pretty well in my classes, you know, getting A's and B's, and, you know, for the most part. And they were tough classes, you know. They challenged me on another level, I think.
Like, how so?
Just, you know, it was just a really good school, and they, the amount of work that was expected of you, a lot of the topics that we were talking about, a lot deeper and a lot more, you know.
So what type of topics were, like, just really interested you?
The one class that I had that I thought was really cool was, it was kind of an ancient civilizations class where we were going through and really delving into, like, the ancient Sumerians and the Egyptians, and, you know, a lot of the cool, we spent a lot of time in ancient Greece, just going into a lot of their society and how they function. I guess it's kind of cool looking back at it, because, you know, I have such a passion for history. You know, it's one of the things that I really have a strong love for. And you know, it was just kind of cool taking on that. And, you know, there's so much reading that's involved in a class like that. And honestly, I don't do well with reading, you know. I'm much better at audible learning, you know.
Yeah.
I remember stuff and almost, like, compartmentalize things, but when I'm reading, I just can't take anything in, you know. I really struggle taking in information, and that was the biggest problem with, like, being at school, was the amount of reading that we were given was just insane. And it's just not how I learned, you know. I learned by doing. I learned by having somebody really, you know, talk to you about it and teach it to you, you know, and very hands-on, very, very personal. So, you know, it was definitely something that I struggled with, was, you know, keeping up with it and also retaining a lot of that information.
Were there teachers that provided that for you? Was that easy access?
It probably could have been. Like, it was something that, like, I've learned that about myself,
mm-hmm.
Through my struggles in school. It's something that I kind of, again, I've done so much, like, searching on kind of what works for me, and it wasn't until I really left the large school and went to a trade school where we did a lot of stuff hands-on. You know, it was so different from everything was very, very hands-on. We had kind of somebody, we just got thrown into the fire a lot of times, and we, you know, making it out was a success for the first time, and then, you know, we just tried to improve every single time, you know. And I mean, it was a fantastic learning opportunity, but that's kind of where I that's kind of where I learned that, you know, I really don't do well with taking in information, but, you know, like, once it's in there, I mean, I can just pull it out and pull stuff out from, you know, a wild amount of time. Somebody will say something and I'll go, boom, I remember that. And they're like, I don't even remember saying that, you know, it's just crazy. It's something about just how my brain functions just with word recollection, with right. When people say something, it just kind of triggers, you know, stuff inside my brain. But you put a textbook in front of me, I just, like, I couldn't tell you, you know, like, you know, really about what's going on, and I wouldn't do very well in those classes, you know. So it was tough. I learned a lot about myself, a lot about, you know, how, you
but
know,
there,
my
but there was
strong
nothing
suits.
Wrong with you. You just learned differently.
I think everyone
just learns, and it's just like figuring that out. That was the hard part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of people that don't do well in large lectures because they don't. There's just a lot going on that's, it's kind of very tough to personalize things in that atmosphere, but for other people it's a breeze, you know. They come in, they sleep during class and they'll get an A, and, you know, they'll ask questions, and, you know, you do such a good job of quickly, you know, when you're reading through it, you're able to conceptualize it and really break it down, and then, you know, you go up to the professor, you ask, you know, questions about it, you do the homework outside of class, and it's like, well, you almost don't need to come to class. Like, that's the crazy thing. Some people just learn really well like that. So it's important to kind of understand how you learn best, and it makes it very challenging to succeed in certain aspects, because, you know, at such a large scale that we're kind of teaching to people now, you know, where we've commercialized education so much that, you know, it's like, well, you know, you're gonna have to. So this is one way to do it, and this is an available way to do it, and. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like one size fits all, and, you know, everybody's just kind of struggling, and it's like, are we really, you know, teaching people things? Are we really getting through to a large portion of people, you know? And we keep making the teaching times longer and longer and longer, and education's meaning less and less and less, and it's like, man, you know, are we really getting through to people, you know? Is that like, are we just banging our heads against a wall and hoping that, you know, things work out, and they're just not working out, you know? So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of important to understand how you learn, and mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people probably feel like they're not very smart because they don't apply themselves properly, you know. They don't want to learn, or that
get encouraged.
I think everybody has the capability to learn.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely one thing. Everybody has the capability to learn, you know, and you know, I think a lot of people probably feel like they're dumb. A lot of people don't feel like they're very smart or intelligent, and, you know, a little bit of, if you're willing to put in some effort and really figure out what works for you, you know, how do you learn, you know, what would make this fun, you know? And that's why I've always admired my mom, because she's done so much work in, I mean, she's almost mastered teaching in the fact that she thinks so much outside of the box while still being, you know, while still being classically trained, thinking outside of the box. Well, you know, if I was a kid, how do I really get this information across? You know, how do I get the buy-in from the kids? You know, and then it's just the straight up fact of, all right, well, once they're involved, once they're engaged, then they can really, you know, discover for themselves how they learn.
Right.
You know, and it's that twofold thing. So it's, you know, it's teaching, it's creating fun and non-traditional ways of, you know, teaching the states, you know, mm-hmm. and teaching, you know, sixth grade science, and it's like how do I you know, how do I change this up and give this a different flavor, a different element, you know? And that's where she does such a good job. And you know, I feel like a lot of teachers and professors, they don't do that first part, which is get the buy-in from people that they really care, that they're really involved, and I think a lot of kids and students shut down when they don't get that response, right. When they don't get that connection, they shut down and they build up those walls, you know, and it really makes it difficult then to be able to teach and develop your skills, you know. And I think a lot of people are really cut short in those capacities, you know, and it makes, you know, learning for you and for everybody else very, very challenging when you're not engaged, when you're not involved in what you're doing, you know. And you're perfectly smart, you're perfectly intelligent, you know, and you've made it this far in life, you know, and having struggles and difficulties, you know, and it just goes to show it's always possible, as long as there's, you know, as long as there's a determination and a will and a desire to improve, you know, and that's, I feel like that's what's really missing right now in most of these problems, because I think 99% of the time, if there was that element of desire and passion and drive to be better, drive to be successful, you know, that, you know, you could find a way to make it work.
Yeah.
You could find a strong suit, a niche that you could, all right, well, if I have to watch YouTube videos and create YouTube videos on this stuff, then and listen to it in the background while I'm doing other things, and that's how I learn best. Then
right.
Boom, we'll find a niche, and we'll be able to fix that problem. We'll be able to go back at it. Whereas, you know, you really do well with one-on-one tutoring. Well, we'll create a way to make that possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just really about that buy-in and about that desire, you know, and I feel like that's something that's really missing, you know. Yeah.
So is that something that you want to do for a living? Like, what is it that you're really passionate about that you want to do as a living, you know?
Well, actually, that's where I find myself in such a
limbo.
Yeah, it's just like it's such a strange conundrum, because I have this ridiculously broad, and in some ways it's refined. It's a refined skill set. In other ways, it's very raw and it's very, you know, off the cuff. Frankly, like just my communication. It's just because I was, you know, I've felt comfortable enough. I had to go, you know, on Facebook Live in front of thousands of people and do color commentary and pretend like I was I played basketball for 20 years, you know, in the NBA. So
cool.
when I was studying for sports broadcasting, it was one of my internship. It was something that I had to do. I was terrified.
Well, yeah, of course.
Believe me.
Do you remember any of your scripts?
I didn't have any scripts. So much of that
came ad lib.
All of that has to be ad lib. I mean, almost all of it, because you're reacting to, and you're really bringing substance to what's going on. So
right.
So the play-by-play guy is really describing what's going on. You know, it's a little bit different, but in the broader sense, the play-by-play guy is really, you know,
so
describing what's going on.
Play guy.
I had to do the color, so I had to describe. Okay, well, this is why this guy was doing this, and this is why this guy was doing that. You know, if he did this, if he did that, you know, just a lot. And honestly, I think it's a harder job in a lot of sense to really be that color guy, to be able to break down things, and it's so fast paced. Everything is live. Everything is in the moment. You have to ad lib. You have to describe things, and you know, for somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience, you have to make up stuff as you go along. You get thrown into the fire real quick, and you've got to just keep your head above water and
but you
know.
You did it.
Yeah, I
was that your jam? Was that something you just totally?
It was something that I enjoyed, definitely. You know, it's one of those things that was very challenging, like, to get into, because you know the people that are, you know, the greater collection of people that are doing what I was doing are ex-athletes, and they really groom ex-athletes to
right.
do that job, you know. So it was very challenging, and then the number of actual play-by-play jobs that were available in the other sense, very, very small. So I really struggled with, you know, like, you know, it's like, do I love it enough to, you know, go at it for 30 years and maybe never get to where I want to go, you know, and realize that, you know, I let all of this other stuff go to pursue this, and maybe I never get to where I want to get to. So it was one of those things, like, I kind of fell out of love with it. You know, during my internship, I started to kind of dread going to work, just because I don't know if I want to do this, you know, as a career. I don't know if I want to be around, you know, this kind of work, and you know, so I started to second guess it. I really. You know, took a step back, and since then I've been treading water about what I've been wanting to do. You know, I feel like I'm a decent writer, but again, not classically trained. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I have a very good vocabulary and acumen for a guy who hasn't picked up a book.
I believe
leisurely.
That.
For a guy who hasn't picked up a book in years,
totally.
I mean, to have what I have is I can't claim anything but natural talent given from incredibly brilliant parents, who are impeccably smart and well-educated people, and really took it upon themselves to make sure that I was passed down that as well. Me and my sister are both fantastically well off because our parents really invested in that, you know, and you know, it's something that I'm incredibly grateful for, that both parents bought into that. And again, that shows that it really starts from your parents in that regard, is
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're a parent and you can really make education and learning something that's important, but you give, again, you allow space for self-discovery. It's such a balancing act, because you don't want to be one of those parents that locks their kid in their room until they do their homework for six hours, you know, because that creates a lot of resentment from the kid. They don't feel loved. They don't feel like they got to, you know, have hobbies. They didn't feel like they got to do certain things. And, you know, the other balance act is, oh, I don't care. Do whatever you want. And, you know, that's kind of where a lot of people just don't care about school at all and really take their education for granted, you know. Right. And, you know, I was just incredibly blessed. So, you know, that, and that, you know, that buy-in from me to take in history and study religion and science, math, and philosophy, and just all different kind of spiritual things. Also, while having a good musical background and a sports background, you know, that's, I found that's really...
Can you play an instrument?
Yeah, I've played tenor saxophone since I was in fifth grade. Yeah, for a long time. And yeah, I was actually a pretty decent jazz saxophonist, you know. I enjoyed jazz. It gave you the freedom and the self-expression that I really didn't feel like I got, you know, anywhere else. And I just felt so at home, and it was something that, you know, I connected with my dad with, because he loves jazz. He really enjoyed coming to my concerts, because he enjoyed yeah. that kind of music. You know, he listened to that, and it was something that I feel like we bonded over with that. And then, you know, my mom was always very supportive of me and my sister doing, you know, band and music and just that whole avenue of expression. And, you know, both me and my sister were both very good musicians. My sister was and still is a fantastic musician, better musician than me, I think. She put in a lot more work than I did to grow and develop that, and, you know, learning guitar and bass and the drums and the French horn and the trumpet, and just, you know, being extraordinarily gifted, you know, as a musician, just incredible.
Would you ever pick that up and get in a band?
It's something.
Maybe start playing and performing at, like, just little bars and places and.
It's certainly something that I would look up to. I definitely I always really liked doing it. You know, as kind of a hobby. I never took it too seriously to you know, a level of professional to me, you know. Like, it was something that I really enjoyed doing, but you know, I didn't really commit myself to it because it wasn't something that I wanted to do as professional, you know. Right. and I just really enjoyed picking it up and kind of seeing what I could do just from my natural capabilities, you know. And
yeah.
It so much of it was natural. I mean, again, I did not put in the work to be able to get the results that I did get. It really is, like, I feel like I've been overly blessed in my life with my capabilities, and my music. Just, I mean, being able to play the instrument that I did, you know, from the 1960s and the golden age of you know, the craft. At, you know, it's the very best instrument that they made, and it, you know, just, like, they can't make stuff that good. You know, it takes time to actually, you know, really get to something that good. And it's just, you know, incredibly blessed with all of my opportunities that I've gotten in my life, you know. And I feel like that in a way has also kind of made deciding what I want to do kind of challenging, you know, because I don't have one skill set, one right. specific strong suit.
What do you good at? What else are you good at? What are your hobbies?
I don't really have too many hobbies. I really enjoy playing video games. you know, I follow a lot of sports. I keep up with sports like crazy. You know, I watch YouTube videos on all different kinds of things, and you know, like watch other people play video games, which is apparently it's quite a nice career venture now for a lot of people, which is crazy. I never would have thought that was something that could pop up, you know, out of nowhere. But it just goes to show the crazy world that we're kind of living in now, and it's crazy how big it's actually become. People are actually being able to go full time at it and make a decent living and do something that they're really, you know, passionate about. It's, you know, it's really cool. But yeah, I just like I've struggled with it because, you know, I want to get into writing. Obviously, I really want to get into editing. You know, I really. That's something that I really enjoy doing. Was I really enjoy editing people's work. I really like, you know, I really like looking at people's work. I like hearing it in my head, and it's like, well, you know, how would I say it, you know, and how would I put it
like
in
writing?
My work? Yeah, yeah.
Like people's writing.
Yeah, yeah. And
yeah.
You know, and I really enjoy that kind of work, you know. It's kind of fun. It's like putting a puzzle piece, you know, puzzle together, and you're
right.
dealing with little pieces, and you know, you figure out like, well, you know, how do I make this puzzle piece fit, you know, properly, and you know, really a balance act of like, all right, well, let's get your work properly while keeping it yours. You know, and it's kind of fun. It puts your own spin on it, and your own,
yeah.
you know, your own little.
So you would be an editor publisher for people's books.
That's something that I would like to do. It is very difficult to do without an English degree, though. Like that's something that's a barrier to, you know, barrier to entry that I've kind of struggled with getting into. It's like, well, it's like, you know, you don't have work experience and you don't have a degree in it. It's like, well, you know, what do you have, you know? It's like, you have my word. No,
yeah,
be the best publisher ever, dang it. No,
I think you should.
I mean
be the first, you know, editor publisher who doesn't have an English degree.
Yeah, just because I
Why
felt
not?
Like it, you know. But
some, you know, yeah. you're just born that way.
I mean, you know, and it would just be kind of cool because I feel like I'm kind of giving back in that way too. You know, I'm helping people's work, their own self expression. They've taken so much time in writing these pieces, and you know, it's like, how can we make it better, you know, and how can we make this the best that it can be? It's kind of special, you know. It's kind of cool, and just being able to do that and give back to, you know, give that, you know, back to people is kind of cool. It's very interesting.
And your project for this explain your project. So I actually want to share that.
Okay, yeah, my project is, it's called, You Are Loved. So it's, throughout the month of February, I'm going to be, compiling a list of 20 letters or so, however many that I can get done throughout the month of February, and kind of enlist people to help me out and write loving and thoughtful letters to the homeless during the month of February. You know, I looked at kind of the cost, you know, the cost for action, you know, and the I know, especially where I come from, back up north, February is probably the worst month of the year, honestly. It's just enough after the holidays, you know, you still got, you know, the couple weeks, the 2-3 weeks in January where you're still, you know, trundling about your New Year's resolutions and everything, and you're still on that Christmas buzz, you know, you still feel fresh from the holidays ending, and you know, you still feel all right, but once it gets to February, it gets really cold. It's in the height of flu season, and now you are, you know, having a holiday about love, and it's very in your face. It's like, right. It's a lot for a lot of people, like love and heartache go
it's
together, and yeah, they're synonymous with each other, love and sad times, and yeah, and I mean,
the expectations,
you know.
Yeah.
You look at it, and suicide rates go up, and you know, during the month of February, I think it's one of the highest in that capacity, you know, and it's freezing cold out, and it's just miserable. It's a really miserable time up north. I remember those were some of the darkest. That was probably the darkest month of the year. Was dealing with that, and then once you get to March, it starts to the hope of spring, you know, and not freezing every day, you know. It's just it becomes a little bit brighter every single day after that. But I know for me that was one of the big factors, and you know, the fact that I've never really celebrated Valentine's Day with a girl that I was with, you know. Now, granted, I've only been with a couple girls, but, you know, like, I've still never really celebrated. I've only had, like, one or two Valentine's days where, you know, I remember having somebody there that I could, you know, share and be into, you know.
So if you were to write a letter to yourself, sort of like a self-love type of letter, like, what would it say?
Well, I know that, well, dear Alex, hope you're well, haha, but, you know, it's, I know that it's very hard for you sometimes to appreciate what you do for other people and the impact that you have on the world. It's often very difficult for you to have confidence when you are so very critical of yourself, but you should be proud of the type of person that you are, the heart that you show, and the commitment to other people that you've always had, and for other people's betterment and wellness. You know, it's something that you know, has always been present, even when you've had low self-esteem, even when you've believed very little in your own capabilities. You always manage to put others ahead of yourself, and you know, you should be very proud of yourself, and you should have more self-confidence because you have a massive amount of self-worth, you know, and you make such a big impact on other people's lives that you don't even realize. And, you know, people are drawn to you, people are, you know, people want to be around you, and people want to be in your calming essence, your calming presence. Very, I've always been told that I've had a very soothing presence to other people, and that I was very relaxing, that I was very, you know, relaxed and calm, and, you know, other people gain benefit from that, just from you being there, you know, so, you know, every time you feel like you don't have that confidence, every time you struggle with your feet stuck in the mud, you know, just look in the mirror and remember that you're so very worthy, and, you know, you really are a great person, even though you struggle with it. You know, you deserve to be loved, you know, and you deserve, you know, what you get, and, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Okay. So, wow. If you were to write a letter to your mom, totally different ballgame.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. What would it say?
Dear mom, not letting Norbert eat this paper. My cat, I swear. Yes, you know, I'm incredibly proud of everything that you've accomplished in your life. You know, I know as well as anybody that you didn't have an easy road to get to where you are. You know, with the things that were put in front of you, you know, your will and your determination to get past those kinds of things that would have probably killed other people. The trauma and the horrible things that were done to you, you know, it just goes to show how strong and how powerful of a woman that you really are. And you are an incredibly passionate, powerful, and inspiring person, you know, to be around. You've given me all the love and support, and I don't know what I would do if, you know, if you weren't there. I don't know where I would be. I'd probably be dead, honestly, personally. But, you know, I'm incredibly blessed to have somebody as caring and loving and supportive as you in my life, to be a mentor and a friend and a guide through this very tricky and difficult thing we call life here. You know, I'm so proud of you, and I hope that you continue to find your light and continue to inspire others to buy in and accept themselves, and continue to grow and be committed to being better, because you've always, you know, done such a good job at getting better from the things that happened to you, you know, and I'm just very proud of you, and I love you very much, and, you know, thank you for everything that you've given me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna leave it at that.
All right.
That's a great ending.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. So,
if someone wanted to write a letter and, you know, help you with your project, like how do they get a hold of you?
You can send me an email. It's reeda0911@gmail.com. If you would like to, write a letter to, a meaningful and impactful, loving letter to, somebody, it would be kind of an anonymous thing, but, feel free to write a letter and just continue to put love and kindness and support out into the world. And, you know, it's so impactful to do that, and, you know, especially to do it to people who have been through a really rough time, and people who are pretty desperate to feel loved and feel cared for, and you know, just, it's so incredible the difference that you can make with that.
Right.
So, you know, feel free to to write a letter and send it in to me, and I'll be collecting them throughout, you know, the entire month of February, and you know, handing them out throughout the month. So I really appreciate it. I'm eternally grateful.
I love it. I think this is awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.